The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 453, recorded on January 11th, 2017. Welcome to the 453rd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 286th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So this is actually try two of last week's episode because last week's episode was broken and none of the King's Men could put Humpty Dumpty back together again. So we're going to do another turn of this with some old news and some new news. We're just gonna mix it up. So anyways, what have you been playing since you got your— I already did that one. What have you been playing, Scott?
Like I think I said before, I played Uncharted 4 and completed that game, and I think it was a really good ending to the series. It was just really— I loved how far they've come along with animation, because the character faces, they get that emotion nowadays, and you could see that subtlety in the eyes and whatnot. And so it was really, really fun and enjoyable game.
And you said you saw your wife was in audience.
Yeah. Yes, yes, she was. She was playing the game along with me, and she would comment and enjoy the story, and just— we talked about it, Uncharted 4, and it was fun to do together. Yeah.
So, let me ask you a question: have you completed Tyranny yet?
No, I haven't finished that one yet.
Okay. So, how about you, TJ? What have you been playing lately?
I started up The Last Guardian, and I've heard the buzz. Problem is, I can see why people would be upset about this game, but I'm having a hard time not liking it.
Here's the thing. The environments are gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Although you will find yourself doing the same thing over and over and over again. But the environments are gorgeous, and you really want to find out where the story is going, especially since you quickly realize that your friend, you know, if you're not careful, won't be your friend anymore and will view you as a nice little snack, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, well, like I said, it's super linear. It'll be interesting to see. There's a lot of animation. Now Scott was talking about all the animation that goes into Uncharted 4, but Scott, TJ, tell us about the animation that goes into The Last Guardian.
When you look at the way that Treecko responds— Treecko's the beast. When you look at the way that it responds to everything around it, including you, just like the environment, the way it just like hops around, and even like when it's upset or when it's soothed, it just gives you this vibe that these guys spent a long time, maybe even like, I don't know, 6 years, studying the way that animals move and react to things.
Yeah.
And I really just dig that sort of feeling of life in your companion.
Unfortunately, it also acts like a cat too much, in that you tell it to do something, sometimes it'll dumbly stare at you and say, "What?
Yeah,
I'm not going to do it."
That's pretty much what I was talking about before. You can sense the life in these animations, and I remember there was a time where it just looked soulless, and now I can feel the heart and soul in a lot of these characters.
Have you played Halo 5?
No.
Okay.
I haven't. So
the animation, the facial animation, is really good. As a matter of fact, Edward Buck is played by— oh dear God, he's going to kill me for forgetting his name.
So you actually see these guys' faces? They take the helmet off.
Yeah, Nathan. Yeah, Blue Team does not, because that's Master Chief's team. Team Osiris does, and a lot of them look like they're actors. I mean, Buck looks exactly like Nathan Fillion.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly like him. As a matter of fact, he's one of the— he's a voice pack for Halo 5 Guardians now. Let me give you another example. When Kevin Spacey is in Call of Duty, Yeah, that's Kevin Spacey. It's almost like his face is so real, it's almost full motion video, but it's not. But they made sure that the character looked like Kevin Spacey. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, facial mapping is really big right now. I mean, it started with Half-Life 2, really. I mean, I don't know if you know this, but Valve spent several years in New York. Okay, let's do that again. Valve spent many years in New York studying emotional and facial response, in which how the face moves and different emotions, you know, and the psychology behind it. So they basically pioneered that. And that's what they were spending a lot of Half-Life 2 doing, aside from the Source engine. And you can see it when you're interacting with Alice, you know, the way, you know, the way her face moves and all that stuff without opening a single word. Without saying a single word, I mean. So,
and like,
go ahead.
I would say that, like, in The Last Guardian, the boy's animations are less interesting. And in fact, like, I think the boy, you really get a feel for it being a last gen game, because there are a lot of ragdoll physics that are just silly as hell.
Well, the camera is PS2 level.
it is. Like, it does this weird thing where if you move too close to either character at any time, it'll like black out, and I don't know why
that
is.
Because it's pulling back, but it's trying to look through rock.
But I can understand where like somebody who's not willing to be patient with this kind of stuff wouldn't be interested. I was skeptical going in. I was like not sure what I was going to be getting, but it's got enough charm to keep me going through.
Well, here's the thing. If you buy into the world and buy into the characters, then a lot of gameplay issues may not it may dissuade you from playing it again, but it's not going to dissuade you from enjoying the experience now because you don't know the story yet.
Yeah, and Team Ico has always been pretty good at portraying characters. I mean, that is their claim to fame with Shadow of the Colossus.
Well, I was about to say, why don't they just remake Shadow of the Colossus? You know, or make a sequel to that. You know, do something that you know is going to be a number one hit before you start experimenting again. You know,
I'd have to see the numbers on. They released Ico and Shadow of the Colossus in a package on PS4 a while back, and I can't remember if it did well. No, wait, that was PS3.
You know, the thing about Shadow of the Colossus and Ico is that they're what are known as acclaimed flops, in that they really didn't do well. They like Psychonauts, you know. Critics loved it, players didn't buy it, and it only gained its reputation, you know, 5 years later when people were saying, "Oh yeah, that game was really good." You know.
Yeah. I also finished Final Fantasy 15.
Oh.
And I gotta say, pretty good. There were some things that I really, really had some issues with. There was this part where, like, the big bad of the game is explaining his grandiose plan, and Noctis is grunting really loudly through the whole thing, and the music is really loud, and I just thought, man, if James Bond was just screaming the entire time that a villain was explaining what they were going to do to the world, they would probably get real flustered. I just imagine Blofeld losing his clue.
Did you ever play Bayonetta?
No, I haven't.
Okay, so in those... has the great boss fights even before it, because the villain, the god will start pontificating and all this stuff, and Bayonetta will go, "Oh, another talkative type, you know. Don't you want to have some fun? We have plenty of time for pillow talk later." She gets off on fighting, you know, and it's sort of like, "Shut up, let's fight already."
Yeah, this was unintentional though. This guy was like explaining with a straight face his plan to the main character, and there's just loud grunting and loud music, and you can't even hear what the guy is saying.
That reminds me of Blue Dragon a little bit. Not in that it was distracting, but just the twist with the main villain. It sounds like the main villain explains everything and says, "Oh yeah, you're fucked. Bye bye," and pings them away. You know.
Uh huh. But my favorite part of the entire ending, spoiler alert, is the part where I got to the end of the credits and the game crashed and my save was corrupted. And I get to explore the post-game content where I play the last two chapters of the game again.
I thought you were about to do it because Bayonetta has that bonus scene after the end of the game there too.
No, not quite as good.
Were you playing on a PS4?
Yes.
It is strange because now I'm hearing all these reports of games crashing on the PS4, like No Man's Sky is crashing, and Final Fantasy XV is crashing, and I'm thinking, you know, all consoles have the same architecture. This should not be happening on a console. Crashing should be rare.
Yeah.
It's just annoying.
It was probably just a random chance because I've talked to my friends about this, and they made it through the end of it, and there is post-game content. There's dungeons afterwards that I'm really excited to get to, but I just happened to have the luck of the draw and crashing right as the credits finished and losing my save.
It shouldn't be too hard to have improved over Final Fantasy XIII.
Final Fantasy XV was good. 13, I'm going to say that much. Final Fantasy XV is the first Final Fantasy I've been interested in 100%ing since Final Fantasy IX. And that's really saying something for me, because I really fell off those games for a long time. And I've tried them all.
It's Mass Effect 2 compared to Final Fantasy 13.
So, TJ, did you get that sword in Final Fantasy IX? The one that you have to race to get to?
Yeah, I finished everything in Final Fantasy IX. I beat Ozma. I got Eden. I did all the jams.
That's crazy. Because I mean, I loved that game too, but I just was not going to bother with that sword. I was just like, nope, that's too much effort.
You know, there are some items you really have to get. Like in Assassin's Creed 2, I didn't care. I wanted Altair's outfit worn by Ezio. Ezio had to wear Altair's outfit. I was just going to do that to leave for that. Yeah, I want all the Assassin's Creed 1 stuff on Ezio because it's cool.
Mm-hmm. I mean, my stance on 100%ing a game or anything like that is that if the game is sufficiently fun enough to make me forget that I'm playing a game, which Final Fantasy IX did with its art style and its characters and its story, then I don't care about grinding. I don't care about jumping through hoops and doing all these crazy, like, repetitive things over and over again, because I'm enjoying myself and it doesn't feel like grinding. If it's something like, I mean, Final Fantasy 13 just had me walking down a corridor and there were invisible walls everywhere, and obviously there was this thing that I had to do, and it was like always pointing me in the direction of that thing and telling me, you have to do this, go do it. And I was like, come on, man, just let me have fun.
My favorite part is when people said, oh, don't worry, the game gets really interesting 30 hours in. Yeah, I'm going to stick around for that long. What, Scott? I didn't hear you.
What's the point if a game takes that long to get good, then it's not a good game?
Yeah. Jordan used to say, when are you going to – you going to patch in the fun? Yeah, this new patch, does it make it fun is the question, you know? And if it's fun 30 hours in, why not make it fun 1 hour in or even less? Mm-hmm. Because here's the thing. Yeah. You know, not many of us – they're called video games, not video – they're video games, not video work.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you know, that too.
I mean, look, Stardew Valley is quote-unquote work, in which you have to do a lot of repetitive things. You have to build your farm and all that stuff, you know, and you have to go into a rhythm. But here's the thing. People go in wanting that, you know. People don't go into Stardew Valley or Animal Crossing or stuff like that without knowing this is what it's going to be about and this is what I want to do. You know, it's not tedious. It's just fun watching things grow under my stewardship. That's the point there. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. I mean, people didn't.
I was going to say the same thing can be said of Minecraft.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's Legos. You know, that's living Lego, literally.
Minecraft is not just doing chores and growing stuff. That's one thing you can do in Minecraft. There are dungeons and story mode and just. Like, so many different things you can do in Minecraft. There's all sorts of game show stuff and maps, and there's a lot in that. It's a sandbox game, so you don't have to do mining and building if you don't want to.
I mean, right. Well, here's the thing is that what I was going to say about Final Fantasy 13 is that the one thing players don't want to do is watch paint dry.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
We're not playing paint dry the game, you know, in which the game plays itself practically. Because in Final Fantasy 13, you don't have to do anything during combat, just sit and watch it. by the way,
and then get 5 stars after your battle. I mean, it's like, what the fuck?
Which is why I don't like Metal Gear Solid series, because Metal Gear Solid 4 opened with a 40-minute cutscene. Yeah, when do I get to play? 40-minute cutscene, when do I get to play? Another cutscene. That's one thing that's one thing about JRPGs, which I always find, in that Western RPGs, they want you to tell your story. Well, in JRPGs, generally, they want to tell you a story. But the thing is, they go into the extreme, and basically, it's like a puzzle game with the combat. Sometimes the puzzles are stupid, sometimes they're good, but it's always the same story over and over and over again. Not that I don't like that. I mean, Batman Arkham Asylum, same story. But Jesus Christ, allow us to do something.
I think Final Fantasy XV finds a great balance in that, because you are like following the story that they tell you, but
You can do whatever the hell you want. I mean, you have exploration, and you can do combat any way you like. You see, at least you have that freedom. I don't mind a linear story. If you want to say go to A to B, a dirty little secret, Mass Effect is very linear. Mass Effect is linear. They have the 4 branches of 4 missions before the main mission. It's the same in every BioWare game, by the way. Knights of the Old Republic, Knights of the Old Republic 2, Mass Effect, Mass Effect 2, Mass Effect. You know, they're saying, okay, you do all these missions, but the general story is still going in the same direction.
Right. And, like, Final Fantasy XV goes out of its way to give you that sort of – I've compared it to Witcher 3 in that way. Like, if you think about the fact that Witcher 3 is very much a journey, a race against time to find this particular character and save them. And yet you can do whatever the hell you feel like, which includes taking on monster hunts, helping the citizenry, and all sorts of things that if it was just being read like a book or being told in a movie, Geralt wouldn't waste his freaking time with this crap. He would go save the person because they're important to him.
Well, let's look at another linear game like Deus Ex, the first Deus Ex. The Deus Ex was extremely linear, except it allowed you to do the levels any way you like. That was the freedom, you know. Do you want to sneak around? Do you want to take an offensive front? There are many ways to make something varied. But getting back to Final Fantasy XIII, you don't have any exploration. You don't have any combat until 30 hours in. Great. If you're going to do that, just release a 2-hour anime and leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to make a cartoon, make a cartoon. If you're not going to be interactive, then just make it a movie or a miniseries. We already have those.
Yes. So, in summary, Final Fantasy XV, much better than Final Fantasy XIII.
And I'm pretty sure Scott is going to say, yeah, I'm going to wait until it's $20.
My wife wants to get it, so we'll have to see. But if it's $60 right now, we're definitely waiting for that to go on sale. And I thought Trials in the Sky, which is another JRPG, was very good at telling its story and letting you interact with its world, because you had lots of side quests and different little things you could do along the way. And apparently, depending on the side quests you did in the first game, it would affect what characters said in the next game, which I thought was cool.
So what I've been playing is I've been playing Halo 5 multiplayer since they debuted Firefight, which is basically all I wanted, pure co-op, because I find Halo 5 multiplayer in general, when it's competitive, to be annoying. But when everybody's on the same side, it's a lot less annoying, and it's fun. You know, I've been playing on Legendary because I find Heroic too simple, too easy. So there's that. And it's really fun. The only problem I have is that you have 5 missions, they're 5 minutes in length each, and the problem with that is the amount of time that you're playing, you can't really use all of your stuff. I mean, by the time you have level 9 equipment available, the game's over. You know, what's the fun in that, you know? And also, the levels are way too big. You know, sometimes more is just more. It doesn't make it better. When I played the original Firefight, the levels were not huge. You know? As a matter of fact, sometimes they were cramped, and that added a lot of... Yes, there were no vehicles, but, you know, I can do without vehicles. I don't need a vehicle in every Halo match. You know? Make small firefights in which the enemies are tougher, and the space is more cramped, and you really have to do more teamwork to defeat them, that's what I want. And also take longer time. No time limit and even, you know, or do the Gears of War thing with Horde mode in which you have to survive 10 rounds, however long it takes.
I remember thinking that one of my favorite multiplayer maps from Halo 2 was that one where, like, it wasn't a wide open space. It was a literal tower and, like, about verticality. And I think that things like that are important to vary it up. Just, like, don't make it all about, like, the grand battles. Have one that's, like, a really close corridor deathmatch.
Or, like, that one level is just inside a tiny little spaceship.
Yeah.
You know, the one that's in the kind of, having that level, I forgot the name of it, it's in this tiny little Covenant spaceship, and everybody's armed with swords and nothing else.
Oh, God, yes.
That's just organized chaos. It is so fun, because everybody's swinging swords, especially if it's not team deathmatch, it's free-for-all. Just everybody sword each other.
Yeah.
Oh, how about swords and sticky grenades? There we go. That would be fun. You know, I have to make that a Forge map, you know, because now the Forge maps include just making rule modifiers. Swords and sticky grenades in the little ship. Let's go. And 20 players all cramped in there. I've been playing a lot of Animation Breakdown, which comes as a surprise. And one of the things they have is the offer wall in which, you know, you can get free gems for doing stuff. And I decided, okay, one was install and run Gardenscapes. And I said, okay, I've seen the ads for that all over the place. And, you know, it's actually very charming. I thought it was going to be one of those games in which you have to build a garden, like those other games like Stardew Valley. But no, actually what it is, it's a match three game. And you're basically building your garden. Every time you complete it, you get stars. Now, it's very simple in that regard, but it is so packed with little touches, like it has its own version of Facebook, and when you make friends, and when you click on friends, they have their own Facebook page, and they're talking about stuff, and then on your Facebook page, they'll be talking to you, and people will be replying to what they said to you. It's very charming. It's surprisingly very complex. I would say Animal Crossing-ish, in which, you know, in Animal Crossing, you have everybody contacting you and talking about stuff. Like this, except with a lot more focus, you know. I've also started a bit of Lost Odyssey because it's backwards compatible. And, everybody's been rejoicing because Battlefield Bad Company 2 is now backwards compatible on the Xbox One. There's a lot of cheering about that, or a lot of excitement. I haven't played it. So, TJ, have you played Bad Company 2?
I have. I liked it a lot. That was the one where they integrated, like, they really upgraded environmental destruction in Bad Company 2. Uh-huh. And so that was the one where you could, like, if there was a sniper shooting at you from a, like, nice little nest over in a house, take a tank and blow that nest up, and it's completely exposed, and it changes the entire dynamic.
I also heard there's a lot of humor in that game as well.
Yeah, it was a pretty good story. It was the last time I remember liking a Battlefield story. I hear Battlefield 1 is very good, but I haven't gotten there yet. Me too. Pretty good game. If you have it, go play it.
I keep on hearing good things about the single-player campaign of Titanfall 2, so I'm going to have to try that at some point. So anyways, we're going to move on to the next news item, which is an old news item, but it's a new news item for this podcast. Rumor, Beyond Good and Evil 2 Switch exclusive for the first 12 months. Oh, by the way, before we go on that, Nintendo just announced today that pre-orders for the Switch are going to be limited. And my reaction is, okay, I'm not buying a Switch because I know what you're going to do, and I'm not going to go with it. What you're going to do is you're going to deliberately make the Switch scarce to bump up sales. And guess what? I don't care then. I'm not going to get a Switch if it's going to be like, you know, if you're going to make it hard to get, then I'm not going to go get it. That's my thing. That's why I didn't get a mini NES, because you made it hard to get. So fuck it. I don't want to buy it.
Yeah. Yeah. That just makes me roll my eyes.
Scott, I know you have an opinion on this.
Yeah, that's just annoying. I don't understand why they would limit it. I mean, yeah, to drive up the sales, because they're apparently a toy maker and not an electronics
Yeah, we have to go back to that. Nintendo thinks they're making toys and not video games.
It really does explain so much, because, I mean, it's just like, wouldn't you want to make as much money as possible by making a product and getting it to people? They will buy it, and then word of mouth will spread, and then that will increase demand. But instead, you're going to do a dick move, limit the supply, and I'm not sure how limited is limited, because, I mean, that and mini NES, that was ridiculous. It's like, I don't see how they're going to make money if they're going to limit it that much to where it's like five at a target. It's like ridiculous. So
They learned all the wrong lessons from the original Wii. You know, they made it hard to get. Everybody wanted a Wii. Unfortunately, they found out that the people who wanted the Wii didn't really care about that it was a Wii. They just wanted something that was hot for that Christmas, just like a Beanie Baby or a Teddy Ruxpin or a Mighty Morphin Power Ranger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm hearing they have all these other accessories and other crap, and so it's just going to be a long wait before I even consider getting a Switch.
And we don't even know the price yet. By the way, for those who don't know, tomorrow on the 12th is when Nintendo is going to do their big reveal of the price and the release date. So, and also the games that are coming with it. So we'll see. Anyways, the rumor, and this will probably be answered tomorrow, rumor Beyond Good and Evil 2 Switch exclusive for the first 12 months. This comes to us from Nintendo Everything. Laura Kate Dale, who is an industry blogger, and she's pretty accurate with her rumors, has published a new set of Switch rumors pertaining specifically to Ubisoft. First, Dale has an update on Beyond Good and Evil 2. Her sources have informed her that the game's code name is Odyssey. It'll be exclusive to the Switch for the game's first 12 months in both retail and digital versions. After that period ends, it'll head over to the PS4, the Xbox One, and PC, but digital only. Dale says Beyond Good and Evil 2's teaser will probably be shown at the end. Dale says Beyond Good and Evil 2's teaser will probably be shown at the end of Switch's big event next week. Dale also shares some news about Rayman Legends, which originally arrived in 2013. She reports that this version of the title will be announced during tomorrow's event and will ship in the second quarter. Finally, Mario and Rabbids crossover RPG is apparently going by the name Rabbids Kingdom Battle. She's heard from one source that it may be pushed back to September, and, you know, I think no one cares about that title at all. I don't care about the Rabbids. Ubisoft is just they've been pushing the Rabbids for what, 8 years now? No one cares.
Yeah, I don't think anybody cares about them. You're right, because they're just a boring, annoying little thing that just makes noise. And I guess Mario's going to be fighting them. I guess so. Maybe, well, I don't know.
The Rabbids are from Rayman. So
yeah, I remember. So, and I remember playing it on the Wii, and they were just obnoxious and annoying, and I didn't really care. And it didn't really even make sense, their uses. It just, I don't know, fighting Rayman, now they're going to fight Mario, I guess. I don't know.
Well, I think we buried the news a little bit here that Beyond Good and Evil 2 actually exists. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, and I'll probably be getting that on PC or PlayStation 4 instead of Switch.
A year from now.
Yeah, a year from
now. When the Switch is available and it's half price.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, Scott, I mean, TJ, you were about to say?
Oh, I was just looking up the IMDb, the Rotten Tomatoes score on the Minions movie.
What?
Because, you know what, I really don't see any difference between the Rabbids and the Minions.
The Minions are actually popular.
The Minions
say what you want, but everybody loves the Minions when they're in a Despicable Me movie. They're not when they're in their own movie. Yeah, there's some people who should not have their own spinoff. You know.
Yeah,
I thought the Minions movie was good.
So it's got a 56.
Well, it's better
on Rotten Tomatoes.
Batman v Superman: Dawn of Justice.
Yeah. I was just thinking about that though. Like, I've never been all that interested in like these little characters that just run around doing stupid things and screaming all the time.
And it's actually a ripoff from Flushed Away, by the way. They're ripping off the slugs from Flushed Away.
The Rabbids or the Minions, or both.
The Minions are ripping off the slugs from Flushed Away. People seem to forget that. because they're basically a comedic Greek chorus or of some sort in Despicable Me, and that's exactly what the slugs were in Flushed Away.
And the aliens in Toy Story, then, if that's what you're going for.
See, those guys were just cloud cuckoo landers who thought that Woody was their god. That's about it.
Well, they thought the claw was the god.
Yeah.
That claw.
The claw. No, but you see, what's it called? It was a holy experience for them. So that was our god.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we're going to be saved. Oh, wait a minute. They were very much, this isn't what we expected at the end of the first film. So, yeah. God, Toy Story 3 was such a disappointment. I already saw that movie before. It was called The Brave Little Toaster.
Toy Story 3 was a beautiful movie. Close your mouth.
Here's the thing. At least it made sense that Rob in The Brave Little Toaster would want the appliances for his college dorm room, because it was just a lamp, an electric blanket, a toaster, and a vacuum cleaner. A costume is not for anything. What kind of we have a 15-year-old playing with toys, much less a college student. Why didn't he toss those things away when he turned 13?
Because some people have emotional attachment to their childhood toys, like I do. I miss my Legos. I wish I still had them.
We're not talking about dolls here. We're not talking about cheap, mass-produced dolls as well. You get a Buzz Lightyear was supposed to be in that universe.
Did it ever occur to you that toy Woody was from his father, who you never see in the movies?
I'm not talking about Woody. I'm talking about Buzz Lightyear. I mean, he's a mass-produced toy. There was nothing special about him. There's about 500,000.
Some people keep their toys, Jonah. Not everybody throws them out at 13.
There are certain toys you sort of get rid of. I mean, let me ask you
and
a question.
There were
what 15-year-old
toys
is
getting
what,
rid of?
What 15-year-old?
I mean, they showed Toy Story 2, it was all about toys being thrown away, and
Mr.
he wanted
Potato
to keep
Head,
Woody
he,
and
he
Buzz.
Retained. He retained a Mr. Potato Head. What teenage boy plays with Mr. Potato Head?
It's not just
keeping them around. He's playing with them. The Kenner Star Wars toys were really, really cool, but I didn't play with them after a bit.
I'll tell you what. I had a cool-ass Jake the Snake action figure with Action Punch, and I wish I still had that.
Yeah, but would you play with it?
Of course I would.
Would you actually play with it?
An Action Punch. An Action Punch, Jonah.
I'm playing with them.
You're not going to play with them. You're just going to have them in a box. You know who you are? You're Al from Al's Toy Barn.
I'm not selling them.
That's it, but you're Al from Al's Toy Barn.
Who's going to put Pop Vinyl Joker in his place if Jake the Snake with Action Punch isn't around?
You know what? You really need a Sid visitation.
That's right. TJ has a whole bunch of toys. You showed a picture of your
someone
desk.
Someone get that firewalker and strap
fox it. From, little fox guy from freaking.
Oh, yeah. I bought the Disney Infinity version of the fox from Zootopia.
Yeah,
that at least is. You put it on your power portal, and you actually play the video game.
No, I don't have that game.
You know what,
I just bought it because I liked it.
You know what you did though? You took Jake the Snake, that doll, and you strapped a firecracker to it, and you lit the firecracker just to see what would happen.
And at any rate, Jonah, at the end of third movie, he does give all his toys away to that little girl.
Yeah, I'm glad he decided. Oh, wait a minute! I shouldn't be playing with these toys in college.
Oh my god.
Oh my
god.
Your child
died. Not everybody else is dead, okay?
Here's the thing. His sister fucking rejected those toys.
It's not everybody's priority. We'll leave it at that. It's not everybody's priority.
Yes.
I mean, look, the Snoopy dog, the Slinky dog was hers. I'm pretty sure the kid. Oh, actually, well, the thing is that. Anyways, so we're going to move on. So where were we with this?
We never even got to the part about Beyond Good and Evil 2.
I mean, first I said it was a thing that it even existed. That was number one. And then we talked about the Switch. Oh, yeah, we were talking about rabbits. That's how this conversation came up.
Yeah.
And we're talking about minions, and somehow I have a minion.
Rabbits.
I do have a Minion, but I don't play with it. It's because it was given away to me at, by Electronic Arts at their mobile thing at E3 a couple of years ago, because they had their Minions mobile game.
Mm-hmm.
So I just have it stuck in there as a tchotchka. I don't play with it. Anyways, so Beyond Good and Evil 2. Well, I think we actually wrapped that up. Okay, so next news item. Go ahead, TJ.
Game mode for Windows 10 will power Xbox One and Project Scorpio games too, from Windows Central. Recently, game mode was revealed in a leaked Windows 10 build 14.9.97. Game mode for Windows 10 appears to be a method of allocating resources to prioritize games when they are running, and we expect this to ship with the Creators Update this spring. Thanks to trusted sources, it seems that it will benefit developers building games for Windows 10, Xbox One, and Project Scorpio. Project Helix, which is the code name for an effort by Microsoft to streamline the development chain between Xbox One, Windows 10, and the upcoming Xbox Project Scorpio, Project Helix will take the form of the Scorpio dev kit, which Microsoft hopes will power all Windows 10-based game development.
Let's hope it does better than Project Spark, just so you know.
Game mode, it appears, is a feature that streamlines variations between Xbox consoles and PCs, making sure as many Windows 10 systems as possible can run games to the standards set by the Xbox One and Project Scorpio. Microsoft describes those target standards as 900 pixels to a 1080p resolution for Xbox One and 4K resolution with 60 frames per second for Project Scorpio. And we have received evidence to suggest that the Xbox One already utilizes game mode in games developed for universal Windows platforms. This means that developers using game mode enabled UWP today to build games for Xbox One at 900 to 1080p and up to 4K for Windows 10 PCs are ready to deploy those games for Project Scorpio, with over 95% of the existing project code intact. This could explain why we're already seeing major players jump on the UWA train, with Resident Evil 7 set for a Windows 10 store debut on January 24th, 2017. If it is a game mode-enabled UWA, Resident Evil 7 is ready for true 4K on Project Scorpio as a result, unpacking its 4K PC textures and settings when it installs on the console. As a Windows 10 store game mode-enabled UWA, Resident Evil 7 would be ready for a true 4K Project Scorpio debut.
I think that's the main point. Usually when you have a launch of a console, you only really have one good game that's first party. The rest are like, eh. And then you have a bunch of third party, which is eh, because they've only had the dev kit for like a couple of months before, you know. Here, you're actually developing for Project Scorpio now. You know,
mm-hmm.
And you're making it easier. So basically what we're saying is that, well, not only do you have a backwards compatible lineup, all your Xbox One games are going to work on Project Scorpio, but they're also going to be forward compatible. You know, so when you were playing Resident Evil 7 or Gears of War 4 or whatever on the Xbox One, it's going to be upscaled even more so than, you know. See, here's the thing. PS2 games were upscaled to PS3. Remember that? So you had God of War looking better. But that was only because it was upscaling. Here, you're actually unpacking the 4K, so you're actually getting a next-gen version of the same game using the same disc. You know, it's going to be remastered itself. So you're going to be playing Resident Evil 7 Remastered. You already own it if you bought it for the Xbox One. And I think that's one of the things for all launch things. It's one of the things for all launch systems is that usually, for the most part, launch games are weak.
Yeah. Not only that, but it seems like a stellar way, if you're developing for Xbox One, it seems like a stellar way to make sure that things like the Batman Arkham Knight port don't happen, that disaster with the PC. It seems like a way to ensure that you have a lot better consistent standards on both Xbox One and PC titles.
It's also influencing developers to work with Windows 10. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, there's still games that are working with Windows 7 and Windows 8. Basically, if you say, well, if you're making Windows 10, you know, not only do you get an Xbox One crowd because you can port it to there, but you also get a Project Scorpio crowd. And it works the other way, too. I mean, if you have Live Anywhere, you know, hey, you bought Gears of War 4 on your Xbox One. Well, guess what? It's ready for your PC if you have Windows 10.
Yeah, we had a lot of disaster pieces in 2016 with games porting over to PC. Dishonored 2 was one of them, and Arkham Knight was probably the most prolific. This could be a great way to streamline that process.
It's also a great way for Microsoft to ensure that more people do Windows games. Because here's the thing, you know, Windows is nice, but the console crowd is a lot larger. You know, and if you get those console crowd people to play it, and also, like I said, cross-platform play. I have friends who are playing Gears of War 4, some on PC, some on Xbox One, and they're playing together. And I hope at some point with the MMOs, Microsoft lightens up and allows joins in so that you can have Xbox One, PS4, and PC gamers playing at the same time on the same server.
Yeah.
That would be cool. I think that's the feature I'm interested in this news article about the game mode, to see if it will allow me to play like Minecraft with people that are on Xbox or PlayStation. And yeah, that's something I'm looking forward to.
I'm pretty sure that Microsoft is working on a next-gen Minecraft, and it's not going to be Minecraft 2. It's just going to be a free update, you know. And when that free update comes, let me continue before you can comment. When that free update comes, you will have cross-platform play between. And you know what? I'm willing to bet you not only Windows 10, but also PS4, PS3, and every other single platform that does Minecraft. Minecraft is a brand unto itself. It's the only Microsoft product that's on Sony consoles.
I think there is a Windows 10 version of Minecraft.
There is.
Yeah. And if you have the PC version, then you can go and download that one. You own the Windows 10 version, so there's that.
But I mean, you know, when they make the upgrade, you know, make it cross-platform play, so you're actually playing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. So also you can have that version with you.
I'm also interested to – yeah?
I was wondering if they have the Smart Glass version of Minecraft, in which you can check your Minecraft on your cell phone, you know, your current level. Or is that – yeah, there yet?
Yeah, there's a Pocket Edition. I think that's what that is, isn't it?
Yeah, but does it link to your actual Minecraft that you have on your PC?
I don't think so.
Well, it would be nice if you could do that, you know, and just be able to work on your Minecraft on the go. Your main world, not the portable one.
I don't think controls on a phone would be as smooth and quick as they are with a keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, but that's not what it would be for, though. It'd be more for, oh yeah, I gotta move this thing, you know, and I want to check to see who's in my server right now and that sort of thing, you know.
Mm.
Or just work in concert, you know. Like, I'm really annoyed that Microsoft more or less dropped Smart Glass from their games. I mean, you can still use it to manipulate your Xbox, but one of the things about Dead Rising 4 was that you could use your smart, you know, as a cell phone. You know, you had the Pip-Boy thing with the Fallout 4, which is okay, but it was much better integrated with Dead Rising 4.
So, yeah, I got bored of the Pip-Boy thing with the Fallout 4. I just never really needed it, didn't really use it, and so I just deleted it after a while.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay, hold on. All right. Square Enix strongly hints at a Dragon Quest XI heading west. This from Push Square. The internet may be filled with hype for Dragon Quest XI, the latest adventure in Square Enix's long-running role-playing series, but it's worth remembering that the game has yet to be officially announced for a Western release. Fortunately, franchise producer Yu Miyake has hinted rather strongly that the publisher is looking to bring the title overseas in the latest issue of Edge magazine. We're trying to put a lot more effort into promoting overseas the spin-off titles we've been working on, Dragon Quest Builders and Dragon Quest Heroes, in order to soften up the ground for Dragon Quest XI. Miyake told the publication, in other words, Square Enix is attempting to grow Dragon Quest's popularity here in the West. Miyake goes in to compare the series with the likes of Final Fantasy, suggesting the company is looking to replicate its success.
The problem with Dragon Quest is that I know you two love it, but it's not very popular here, at least in terms of sales. And, you know, that's one thing that they're trying to do, is trying to say, hey, we exist aside from Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I did look at the trailer that they showed for the game, showcasing gameplay where you could ride on a horse and you can climb all over buildings in town. They have a 3DS version and a future PlayStation 4 version of the game, and it looks great on both consoles, and it looks like it would be fun to play on both of them even. And I know what you mean about growing its popularity, because I remember when the Dragon Quest Heroes was out, there was a limited edition that they were selling, and it took them forever to sell it, it looked like, because other things that...
You mean it was just sitting there on the shelf?
I mean, like, I would watch the number of how many they said they had, and it just took, like, weeks for it to go down to be sold out.
Wait a minute, wait, was this on the site? Was there a counter?
I think this was on their website I think it kept being posted on Facebook. That's what it was. And I kept seeing the post and saying, oh, we got only this much left. And I think I went to their page and they kept making posts on how much of their limited edition they had left. And it just took a really long time. It seemed to get sold out, which was a slime edition thing where you could get slime weapons in the game and slime armor. And like, it was just silly. I was like, I don't want this. But, I'm interested in the Dragon Quest Builder, but I'm not so much interested in Dragon Quest Heroes, because it's like the Dynasty Warriors or Draken, where you're just fighting hordes of armies. And it's a little bit too much of a button mash for me. It's just a little too mindless. I'd like to build.
Of course I love Dragon Quest games. I do. I've been playing them since the first one, but I can see why they're not as popular over here as, say, Final Fantasy. And I know exactly, I know exactly where to point one on that particular issue, is that Final Fantasy games have never, ever, ever been the same. Like, maybe through Final Fantasy 1 through 6, they had a very similar thing going on. And Final Fantasy up to probably about 10, they did like the three player party where you're all standing in a line, taking turns swinging. But they've always had dynamic mechanics between them that made them very specifically different from one another. And I think that's the difference between Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest, is that Dragon Quest was the original JRPG, and it really hasn't changed too much from that.
Like, I remember Final Fantasy, they each had different party numbers. I remember the first game you had 4, second game I think was 4 as well, but like
Final Fantasy 6 had like 18 party members.
Well, yeah, but you can only have you can only have 4 at a time. It was Final Fantasy 4 that you could have 5 party members in the game. In battle at once. So that was a little bit different.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're on a different world each time. But like the first game you were in, going back to Dragon's Quest, the first game you were, I think you were Edric or his descendant or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in the second game you had actually a party of 3. So they did change it from there, because before you were doing one-on-one fights with monsters and now you had a party. And then in Part 3, you could actually create your own characters as opposed to Part 2, which had story particular ones. So it was a slow evolution of the series. So I guess it did take a while. But I don't know. I enjoyed it. You know,
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I like Dragon Quest. I like that style because I grew up with it. But I can see where other people, like new players today, might not. Phil Lord, what was the game that he created? Fez. He famously said that like Japanese games have fallen.
Jeez, please.
Yeah, he famously said that Japanese games have fallen behind because they have failed to evolve. And well, before he got like hazed for being a racist on that particular matter, it was an interesting point to be made, and I think it applies heavily to Dragon Quest. That game.
Thing is that wait, Phil Lord was also quoting a Japanese developer when he said that too. It wasn't him. He's not the only person who thought that.
Yeah, like I like Dragon Quest, but I can see where other people wouldn't because there is a lot of grind in Dragon Quest games, and it's a very, very traditional first JRPG style. Yeah. I can see why people are into Dragon Quest Builders because it's very different. It's taking this world, this alternative scenario to the first game, and adding some Minecraft building aspects to it in addition to it being a Dragon Quest RPG. That's cool. That's interesting and new.
I liked in part Dragon Quest VIII where they introduced the alchemical cauldron, so you had a bit of crafting there. So they did introduce things. It's just like they might introduce one newer, different concept each Dragon's Quest, whereas like games like Final Fantasy was really different each time. Like the
Yeah, Jobs compare quest. That to Final Fantasy 15, which is basically Square Enix's riff on Witcher 3.
Well, you know what? I really liked Dragon Quest IX, which was on the DS. So for those of you who still have backwards compatibility with the DS on their 3DS, try out Dragon Quest IX. I think it's a good introductory to the series. You know, if you want to jump in, relatively new. You know, it's from 2009, but hey, there was only the Dragon Quest X came out in 2012, and they haven't seen one since.
Yeah, I think I need to play Dragon Quest X. I didn't see that one.
Really?
Was that one out? Or?
I like Werther's Originals, so I will probably continue to play Dragon Quest.
Now, also,
yeah, same here.
You were enthusing about the other Dragon Quest spinoff that they mentioned, Dragon Quest Builders, Scott.
Yes. Yes, I'm interested in that game as well. I'm going to get that for PlayStation 4 because I felt like this is what it looks to me. This is what Minecraft story mode should have been. This should have been about rebuilding a world and having quests and being able to decide how you build it and not just hitting Q to watch the game build stuff for you. It just wasn't, you know, that wasn't the Minecraft I wanted to play. It was in Minecraft, but it was like watching Minecraft and not playing Minecraft.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know.
You watched other people play Minecraft, and then you made some choices along the way.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, so we're going to move on to the next item. Xbox boss says Microsoft will take risks after scale-bound cancellation. And this comes to us from VG247. Yesterday, Minecraft announced that it had canceled the Xbox One and PC game Scalebound, which was in development at Bayonetta Studio Platinum Games. Head of Xbox Phil Spencer said it was a difficult decision to cancel the project, but one that was, quote-unquote, better for Xbox gamers. Now Spencer has spoken up again about Scalebound's cancellation. Writing on Twitter today, Spencer vowed that Microsoft will, quote-unquote, continue to take risks with the games it greenlights. I know we have to take risks, he said. I realize it probably now sounds hollow, but I agree. In another tweet, Spencer said the cancellation of Scalebound, you know, every time I say that, I think I'm saying it wrong, but I'm saying it right. Scalebound won't stop Microsoft from signing third-party games in the future. At the same time, you can expect Microsoft to do, of course, continue to invest in projects from its own studios as well. I won't abandon signing independent studio projects, but I agree first-party internal studios are critical, he said. Spencer also personally apologized for canceling Scalebound, saying it hurt me as well, and to the community, I apologize. I want everything we start to turn out great, take risks, create diversity. So, yeah, this happens. Sometimes it backfires because Microsoft backed a game and decided not to back it anymore. Well, a little game by the name of Psychonauts a while ago. And Double Fine Games had to complete it. But a lot of times, you know, here's a dirty little secret. A lot of the games that start development, we never hear about and are canceled. I mean, I know Scott remembers this, but Sid Meier actually had a game called Dinosaurs, in which it was going to be a strategy game about dinosaurs, which was back in, what, 1999? And he said, I'm not doing it anymore because it's not going to be fun. You know? I mean, you can push games forward like, what was the name of that game that Sony released? The something 1889 game? which was basically 3 hours of nothing except a tech show off. What was the name of that game? 1886 or something like that for the
PS? I think you had it right the first time, 1889. Was that a...
The Order 1886. It was the Order 1886.
Oh, yeah.
So you can push forward with a crappy game.
Werewolves or something?
Yeah, werewolves and Nikola Tesla, and it was a complete garbage. But they had to complete it because they needed a tech demo for their console. You know, sometimes some games are just better left not made. I mean, ReCore is astoundingly average. I mean, ReCore was supposed to be a big game, you know, and it turned out to be a $30 game, which was, okay, I guess. You know, and if Scalebound... Go ahead. I was about to say, if Scalebound wasn't going to be fun, then don't bother.
I mean, Capcom put out Umbrella Corps, and who thought actually, that was a good idea?
It was Umbrella Corps, but I think Umbrella Corps is an apt enough description.
Yeah. Whoever decided that was a good idea to go ahead and put that on shelves, I don't wish bad things on people, but man, I would be questioning my job security after the reviews started coming in, because that was a absolute pile of crap.
Well, we could also examine the Metroid Prime Federation Force as another idea. You know, they should have said, no, this isn't going to work. I mean, who thought that was a good idea?
And it always feels bad to say as like a reviewer, because you know that people put time into this, and you know that somebody was telling them, we have to continue making this, even if and you know that at some point somebody was like, we're making garbage. Are we going to continue making garbage?
Well, here's the thing. Remember what and Paul will – I'm going to have to speak for Paul because he'd pipe up right now. He'd say, Shigeru Miyamoto says that, you know, a bad game is bad forever, you know.
But we don't know if Scalebound was going to be good or bad. It looked like it was good, and it looked like they had put a lot of work into it. I mean, there was a lot of detailed animations going on already, and the guy, the director of the game, Hideki Kamiya, apologized for this.
Well, here's the thing. The Order 1886 looked gorgeous. It looked great. Yeah. That's why they call them a tech demo, you know. And the other thing is that Platinum Games hasn't said if they're going to move on with the project or drop it yet. I mean, they could make it independently and just find a publisher. Like I said, they did discuss this with Platinum Games. They did have a roundtable and say, look, this isn't working, you know. And that's actually what happened with was it Gigantic? Gigantic, I think, was canceled for the same reason. Although I think they've brought it back again. You know,
mm-hmm. They're still working on it.
This happens all the time. Sometimes you have a great concept. Midway through production, you say, oh, this is not going to work. And here's the thing, and I know, Scott, you can appreciate this. This happens a lot with Kickstarter games in which, yeah, it's not working, but guess what? People have already paid for it. People have already backed us. You know, that's exactly what happened with Mighty No. 9. You know, I think the
shocking thing to a lot of people is that this is Platinum Games, maker of Bayonetta, Mad World, and lots of other titles that we've loved. And to see one of their titles canned is sort of surprising.
Well, not all of their games are golden. Platinum, gold, get it? I mean, they're not all great. I mean, Vanquish was an interesting experiment, but it sucked.
Yeah.
You know, Star Fox Zero, the less said, the better. I never played it, but was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutants of Manhattan any good?
It was middling. It was people have had problems with a lot of the 3D Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle games, and that one wasn't one that escaped the veil.
But you know, the Platinum said, you know what? That's fine, but we still have Nier Automata coming out next year, this year actually. So, you know, I mean, it's not like they don't have any games out, so if it's coming out for Microsoft Windows and PS4, so I want to bet it's also going to be coming out for Xbox One, too. Of course, if they do it for Windows 10, it's going to be for Xbox. You know, that's one of the things is that Windows 10 and the Xbox are going to be so heavily married that, you know. The only thing is that at some point I would love to play Bayonetta 2, but I'm not getting a Wii U just to play it. Anyways, I mean, it's a pity that it's not coming out. But again, I'd rather see a good game than ew. Because it can only hurt you if you release a game that people say, oh, it's not really all that good.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I'll just have to wait for some other game to interest me in the Xbox, because this was the only one that looked remotely interesting that was going to be an exclusive for Xbox that I would want to get at one. Because as it is, most games I just get on PS4 or PlayStation. I mean, computer, PC.
Well, you could just get Final Fantasy 15, which had a lot of the same elements as Scalebound, in my opinion, except for the fact you're riding dragons and you're controlling dragons, but the combat is the same.
Yeah, I'd like to ride dragons and play with dragons, like in Draken and Drakengard, or Dragonguard.
Wait a minute, would you ever play the dragon riding game that was on the Xbox?
Panzer Dragoon?
No.
There's also, well, not only Panzer Dragoon, but they also had that game that was released on the Xbox One as well, which was sort of like a, you know, people were a little disappointed with it, but after a while they said, no, actually it's pretty good. And I'm trying to remember, it's the spiritual successor, it is Crimson Dragon. That was the name of it. Crimson Dragon. It was a real...
Okay. I hadn't heard of that one.
Yeah, it's a dragon riding game, and it's actually pretty fun. I mean, I couldn't stick with it because there was a lot of things on my plate at the time, but I may reinstall it. It was actually free on what's it called for a while, too. I think it's probably about $9 by now because it was one of the launch titles.
Hmm. Dragon Guard was also sort of like that, and actually Dragon Guard was also developed by Platinum. I didn't know that Platinum actually helped with that game.
Well, there you go. That was a fun game that I enjoyed playing.
You know, speaking of Crimson, why don't they just remake Crimson Skies? Damn it!
Yes,
that was a lot of people's first. That was a lot of people's first experience on Xbox Live was Crimson Skies. Not mine. Mine was the Mech Warrior game. But yeah, I mean, Crimson Skies was pretty fun.
It was great. It was probably the closest thing to answer that Microsoft ever had to, like, the Ace Combat series.
Or Star Wars.
Yeah.
I mean, the combat in that was like X-Wing and TIE Fighters, basically.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, Microsoft, Crimson Skies, let's do it. I gotta see.
You've got an open window in your scheduling. Make it happen.
We're not going to have a podcast next week because I'm going to be in L.A. As a matter of fact, I'm flying tomorrow. So we will see what the end of January, which would be January 25th, is when next time we're going to record. We'd like to hear from you. We haven't been getting many email postings lately, so we'd like to have some listener feedback. The one listener feedback we had was from someone who just said, yep, vanilla World of Warcraft, come back. It's coming back, you know. I know I would be interested in the vanilla World of Warcraft.
You hear from people like Max Donovan?
Donovan. Not Max Donovan, just Donovan.
Okay.
Anyways, we will see you in 2 weeks.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.